This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast is green power. Okay, we've heard of black power, brown power, red power, yellow power, white power. Okay, but we're going to talk about green power with a guy who I really consider one of my most esteemed colleagues. He's a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine. He's Jim LaValle. He's a registered pharmacist. He's a certified clinical nutritionist. But he's also a really versatile guy on the nutrition scene. And to give you an idea, lately, Jim, you've been doing a circuit on the NFL Combine. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how nutrition addresses some of the needs of professional football.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the last 10 days, it was, working with, some NFL athletes, working with actually going to the NBA summit because, they have a lot of stress fractures and talking there in New York and finishing at the NFL Hall of Fame and the ceremonies there and, working to put together programs there with for retired players. And, it's pretty simple. Once you start to train hard, the harder the demands you make on your body, the more you skew your baseline nutrition status. So, it's that same old story I tell people. If we're not putting magnesium in our catalytic converters, then we're going to have to figure a way to get magnesium in our diet. And, along with other trace minerals that get used up in vitamins and obviously the management of oxidative stress that occurs, with training. So the big thing that I really do with no matter who it is I'm working with, whatever sport, it all starts with understanding where are their electrolytes? Where's their vitamin D? Where are their iron stores at? Do they have any signs of chronic inflammatory chemistry going on? Is their immune system activated so that maybe their gut is becoming permeable because of all the stress of training so much? There's just a lot of variables that can occur. And it's amazing how much you can get an athlete to perform at a higher level just by balancing their nutrition, the nutrients they need to get in for the level of work they do, and then teaching them about how to fuel themselves better with better quality foods. And that's really the basis. Sometimes I got to get, fancy and we have to order extra labs or we got to look at, food intolerances or we got to look at, other inflammatory markers that are beyond the basic ones. But honestly, it's a big chunk of my work is really looking at their chemistry and going, okay, where are the shifts? Where are the imbalances? How are they feeling? Helping them to make sure they're sleeping well, making sure they're getting the nutrients they need. So, because 50% of non-contact injuries is thought to be due to imbalances in nutrition.
Wow. So really, this is some real proving ground for the proposition that nutrition can make a difference because these are, highly, stressed individuals. They're training hard. Many of them come, let's face it, probably from not the best nutritional backgrounds, that training table mentality. And absolutely. So the question I would have for you is how receptive are they to this type of message? Do they scoff at, Jim LaValle is here. He's a certified clinical nutritionist. He's going to tell you how to eat. Not everyone is Tom Brady, who's so fastidious about their diet.
Yeah, I you know what? I think there's been a really big movement in professional sports to provide better quality nutrition to their athletes, you know, in training table food. I mean, even my son's college at Utah State, their training table is pretty good because he has an egg allergy and he actually has to eat gluten-free. And he gets great food on the training table. So I think it's a lot less resistant than it was 5 years ago. And I would say looking at biomarkers, you know, really looking at labs and assessing someone, not from trying to find out if they're sick, but trying to optimize them. That was my whole talk at the NBA summit was, mm-hmm. you know, biomarkers and, you know, what it can do for, you know, the longevity and resiliency of an NBA basketball player.
And you also have like big name athletes like Djokovic in tennis, who has claimed that, you know, some of his success, his endurance, his ability to recover from injuries is due to a gluten-free diet. He's espoused that. And, you know, so there's a certain, you know, groundswell among athletes right. to adopt a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah, there is. And then there's the, you know, then you'll find what I'll fight sometimes is they read about, a social media warrior out there espousing the benefits of why everyone should eat ketogenic or something like that. And then we have to fight through that and kind of educate them on, you know, what they need to do because they're an athlete, which is different from maybe what a person who's not as active might be able to get away with. I'm in no way espousing a ketogenic diet. We use it in certain instances, but certainly not our baseline. And
more therapeutically for certain conditions.
Yeah, we have, you know, cancer cases, we epilepsy, neurodegenerative stuff. We'll go after it with that, but we'll still add more fiber into their diet because, you know, we really feel strongly that fiber is a missing piece to that nobody ends up getting. But I think that without a doubt, the awareness is finally reaching, into the college level. Certainly the sports performance teams are now starting to be established where you have a director of performance who actually is overseeing both medical staff and training staff. And that's kind of a very novel, more European approach to, you know, how to maintain, these athletes. And so, you know, I think it's fantastic because if you could get these guys to A, have less risk of injury, B, be more resilient and therefore have maybe a longer career and maybe feel better and enjoy their career, that's awesome stuff.
Yeah, and I would also point out that, you know, one of the purposes, I think, of professional sports is to provide us with role models. And unfortunately, you know, some of the role models have not been that great in terms of lifestyle. You know, they beat up their girlfriends. They drink too much. They take drugs. They're gangbangers. And, you know, I think it's really great that some of these folks are epitomizing the benefits of clean lifestyle and healthy diet because it's the kids who really try to emulate them. And, I think that that's one of the positive spin-offs of that, you know, whether or not it, earns people a Super Bowl title.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. And I think it's interesting. I was in a meeting with someone who does a lot of work with athletes on neuroinflammation, and they have kind of an in-house treatment where they're using IVs to help build up, you know, neurotransmitters, and they're doing behavioral therapies, and they're using, you know, different types of techniques.
It's like, you know, for concussion really, recovery and for prevention of
right.
you know, this entity that's in athletes. What is it called? It's got a fancy acronym.
Yeah, that's
the concussive syndrome, whatever it is.
Yep. So, I mean, I think that, you know, without a doubt, healthier nutrition protects the brain as well. I mean, there's been enough studies to show that, you know, having omega-3 fatty acids on board, nicotinamide riboside on board, there's ways to protect your, you know, your chemistry better. Is it still a collision sport? Well, yes, it is. And so is soccer and so is rugby. And, you know, silver race car drivers that have a wreck and hit a wall at high speed. I mean, it's occupational hazard. Policemen have to deal with it. Special, armed forces have to deal with it because they get concussive risks from you know, things like firing guns a lot, right? When we're on the practice range. So I think in general, our answer is to try to look for solutions to protect people for the professions that they choose. And really try to, you know, mitigate their risk as much as possible. Because there's going to be spectator sports and they influence a lot of people. Just like you said, I'm out there. I'm wanting to create positive role models. I mean, look at LeBron James. I mean, he's a big advocate for healthy eating, you know, and he gets out there and talks to school kids about it and everything else, right? I mean, you and I, who've dedicated our lives to it, you have a great radio show. You get out there. A lot of people hear it.
We have like one one-hundredth of the influence of a LeBron James.
Exactly. You know? That's what I'm talking about.
Right?
We just, you know, we're just out there trying to make a difference. And these icons that once they catch on to it, it can really...
Thousands of hours of broadcasting. And, he does like a five-minute soundbite, you know, and boom. It goes viral. Let's steer us back to the topic green power, because that's kind of intriguing. What are we talking about here? You know, are we talking about, it's not St. Paddy's Day. We're talking about green beer or leprechauns.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the jackets that they wear for Augusta when they win the and the Masters.
Bring it back to sports.
I mean, you know, green power is really all about looking at it, your nutrition status and where you're at. And you and I have talked about this in the past. It is very hard for people to eat, most people to eat enough vegetables. And we know that greens are incredibly important because they're rich in minerals. They're rich in antioxidant nutrients. And they even have some detoxification capacity. But the biggest thing is that what I really try to get across for people is if you're having trouble getting vegetables in your day, drink your vegetables, but don't drink your vegetables in a smoothie that's got a bunch of fruit juice and a bunch of added sugar. If you go to a store and you pull a bottle, a lot of these, you know, smoothies have more sugar in them than if you decided to drink a can of a soda, you know? And so I think it's important for people to really understand that, you know, one of the big things that we do, one of the biggest things we do when I'm even working with athletes, stress fractures, big problem with alkalinization. You know, when your tissues get acidic, you pull minerals from your bone. And when you pull minerals from your bone, you stress the bone. And
let's posit that is a factor in disease. What type of lifestyle, what type of diet will promote a hyperacid state? And is that, you know, a theme for degenerative disease in the West, excess acidity?
Well, I think that, excessive eating, period, is a theme for disease in the West. But then, now we'll go from there. So I think for a lot of people, they just eat too much food, and I think, you know, very well fed states are definitely a problem with most individuals. But in general, you can eat too much meat. You could eat too many grains. You could eat too much sugar. Those tend to be the most acidifying foods.
And also sodas, with a real rich dollop of phosphorus.
Absolutely. So drinking a lot of sodas, if that's your way of hydrating, that's pretty acidic. So, you know, you can just take take a pH strip and check it. And so I think in general, if you look at how most people eat, when I talk to people, they usually eat one or two vegetables a day. Mm-hmm. If you look at the National Cancer Institute recommendation, right? 9 to 13 servings of vegetables a day. I mean, that's the National Cancer Institute recommendation. I mean, we should, you know, be doing a much better job of trying to get people to understand that. But, you know, one of the problems that we have is that, you know, also a lot of times our vegetables, maybe the way they're grown doesn't have as much taste. I know if you go to Europe and, you know, go abroad and you go to New Zealand and you taste their vegetables. They've got so much more complexity to their taste. And I think it's because of the micronutrients in the soil and the way they're grown. And so therefore, when people eat a lot of, you know, try to eat vegetables, you know, they're like, well, I don't get much flavor on it unless I put a bunch of cheese on it. Right. So, you know, I can eat cheesy broccoli, but, you know, I'm not going to be able to eat that broccoli. So I think there's some, you know, there's some struggles that we have because we just haven't emphasized enough the value of, you know, eating to a, you know, to a balanced plate. And everybody has a different idea of what balance is, right? And I'm surely not going to argue, you know, the benefits of a 22 to 27% carbohydrate diet versus a, you know, 30% carbohydrate diet. It depends on what your lifestyle is and what you're doing. But I think that in general, I can make a pretty bold statement and say most people, because they mainly eat a lot of meat, you saw the, remember the studies where they showed kidney function if you just ate a bunch of meat, but then they added vegetables to the mix and, you know, their pH of the urine stayed healthy and they did better. Vegetables are the great neutralizer.
Well, I'm sure you would say that, you know, even though you may be an advocate at times for a paleo style diet, I think a basic misunderstanding of the paleo diet is that it's like, you know, Fred Flintstone with the, you know, the brontosaurus steaks on the barbecue. And it really wasn't that. They sought out animal protein, but, you know, the men went on these heroic journeys to you know, slay a mastodon, while the women patiently gathered herbs and roots and nuts and berries, and they actually accounted for the vast majority of the calories that were consumed because it was relatively consistent. And hunting was a kind of a hit or miss activity.
That's exactly right. And I still go back to, and I know why, because it was a very hard life then, but we can't use it for a model for longevity, even though I think it's a good model for how we should eat, right? Because I didn't, you know, Paleolithic man didn't live a very long time. They got taken out by other things, right? Whether it was infection or an animal or, you know, the harshness of climate. But I do believe that if we add, so I'm, you know, they're not as big on legumes, and I happen to think that, you know, a lot of Mediterraneans have some legumes and the biggest thing for me is just making sure you get enough fiber, you know, and, I've just seen over and over again, it helped people. And, so yeah, somewhat of a modernist Paleolithic diet is, really, if most people did that, they'd be way better off than what their current diet is probably. And I know the, you know, vegetarians or pescatarians would argue that, you know, their method is, superior, but, for me, I found that just what you said, base your diet, nuts, seeds, some starch, because you went and you got root vegetables and you did get some resistant starch and, you know, plenty of other plant foods, then with purposeful, lean proteins, you're going to do pretty good.
So when it comes to acid alkaline, you know, what do you think of the vogue of, you know, taking a teaspoon or even a tablespoon of sodium bicarb? You can make yourself more alkaline that way. Is that a good way to go?
The problem is some people get an upset stomach with sodium bicarb. I mean, you could certainly use like sodium potassium bicarb. It's a little better tolerated if you are looking to do that. I mean, that's
buffered vitamin C that sometimes is more alkaline. Yeah.
Yeah. You can, there's things you can certainly do a little more heroically to try to alkalinize yourself. I mean, the big reason, you know, you use things like sodium, potassium, bicarbonate, of course, is if your urine pH is low because you're not eating, you know, minerals and getting these foods in, when your body's detoxifying things, it has to add a handle to the toxin it's trying to get rid of. And when it goes through your kidneys, if you're in a very acidic urine, there's a dissociation that occurs with, you know, with what you're trying to excrete. So you can get, you know, you can liberate, say, free cadmium or free mercury. And so one of the things that they found is that, you know, a low urinary pH impedes detoxification. And certainly over the last, oh my gosh, 3 years, there's been some great studies tracking urinary pH and progression of complications in type 2 diabetics. Obviously, when you're trying to spare somebody from going into dialysis, they add sodium bicarb. and they
under those circumstances, yep.
Yeah, you get more, you spare the kidneys. So, so it's, you know, it's really, to me, I think it's interesting that I'm not the you know, you always hear kind of the old, you know, the naturopath, approach, which is, oh, you know, alkalinize. I think you need minerals. Your body's supposed to have minerals. Yeah. And when your body has minerals, it's going to, be more efficient in the way that its homeostasis and its functions are. The problem is getting those minerals can be difficult. I remember the last time we talked, you talked about chlorophyll and what's in the center of chlorophyll. And, you know, if you don't eat greens, you don't get the magnesium unless they're putting it in your water, or maybe you're eating a quarter pound of pumpkin seeds every day, right? Mm-hmm. So I really think that, you know, if you're not going to eat it, try and drink it. And, you know, I like green drinks, for people that can add them to water, and it can be a little energizing. You know, wheatgrass can be energizing, and as long as it's, you know, no sugar, add to water, drink it. I had a basketball player. I'll tell you what, it was funny. I had a basketball player. I said, man, I want you to try and drink this green drink. And he just looked at me and he was, you know, are you crazy? I'm not drinking that. And, literally he started drinking it, and he felt so much better when he was practicing. This is a pro basketball player, that he requests it every day before his workout. That's pretty neat. And I think if people would, you know, reach out a little bit and try something different, maybe they'd feel better versus drinking an extra coffee or an extra Monster or chewing some caffeine gum or whatever they're doing. Try something that might be healthy for you and give you energy.
Okay, we're going to do a little deeper dive on some of the choices out there, because, you know, frankly, products abound out there in the marketplace. And so we're going to give you the heads up on how to evaluate the products that provide green power. That's the theme of today's program. Our guest is Jim LaValle. Jim is a clinical pharmacist, and he's a board-certified clinical nutritionist. And we'll be right back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine.